At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
In 2015 and 2016, the neonatal unit at the Countess of Chester Hospital in England experienced a shocking surge in infant mortality rates.
As authorities worked to uncover the cause of the tragedy, nurse Lucy Letby came under suspicion. Arrested three times over a period of 2 years, Letby now stands trial, accused of 8 murders and 10 attempted murders of babies under her care.
With allegations ranging from injecting air into babies' veins to using insulin to end their lives, the case has captivated the nation and sparked a fierce debate over medical malpractice and the duty of care owed to vulnerable patients.
Hear the full story on our new podcast, Nurse of Death, available wherever you get podcasts.
Search and press subscribe so you don't miss any of the chilling details in this shocking story. Search Nurse of Death right now and press subscribe where you get podcasts. Hey, everybody, quick episode note. This interview that we did with Scott Roeder of Evidence Room was recorded yesterday afternoon, right before the information came out that SLED is going to be considering Stephen Smith's death a homicide. So some of the tenses that we talk about is, what will they rule? When will they rule? Literally happened right before that ruling came out. Nonetheless, great interview. I hope you enjoy.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
So, there's been a lot of rumblings and rumors and accusations regarding the death of Stephen Smith, which I think we should just on this show call it a murder, because that really is what it was. Now, I don't know who the murderer is, and I know there's a lot of people out there just, you know, spinning at the wheel, waiting and hoping that the found individual, if they ever do catch the murderer, has the last name of Murtaugh. But I don't know that that is the case. Yes, there's lots of shady stuff involving that family, without a doubt. Buster Murtaugh releasing a statement this week through his attorneys, Jim Griffin and Dick Harpootalian, which, again, I would suggest maybe getting different attorneys at this point because of track record, the connection to dad, and all that. But anyway, stating, I please stop accusing me of this. I didn't. I have nothing to do with it and all of that. And that's fair. I can hear him. I get it. Going through a lot of hell trying to piece together a life after your mother and your brother are brutally murdered, your dad's incarcerated for their murders. Just chaos. And if he has absolutely nothing to do with any of this stuff, you've got to feel bad for someone that's living a life like that. But granted, there has been a lot of speculation about this. And I don't want to speculate today on Buster or anything like that. I want to talk more about the logistics of a body being exhumed all these years later. And then once you do exhume the body of Stephen Smith for the autopsy, which is about to be taking place, what evidence that you gather from there can lead you further in a direction of finding some names, of finding some potential suspects, no matter who they may be. Again, I'm not in any way insinuating here Buster had anything to do with this. We don't know. But the family of Stephen Smith does deserve to know whoever that may be, whether it's one or more people. For this, Scott Roeder coming in with Evidence Room. Scott, I want to ask you this. We're talking 8 years into a body being buried. What sort of evidence are they going to be looking for? What can we find? What can it tell us all this time in?
Well, I think you can find quite a bit. You know, when we're talking now, my understanding is that the prevailing theory is that this kid 19-year-old nursing student, Steve Smith, was hit by a random car, hit and run. There were no tire tracks, and he died from blunt force trauma to the head.
This is now, that's let me just say this. That is what the final charge was. All those who were actually on the scene of the crime, though, did not say it was a hit and run. It looked like a body got dropped because all of the indicators of a hit and run were not present.
Well, yeah, I was getting there because, like, okay, so if the if there's no car debris, if there's, you know, you would expect if somebody gets hit at any level of miles per hour, there's going to be car debris, a broken taillight, the grate on the front of the car, the grill, those things break very easily. Bumpers come off very easily. His body would have had multiple fractures, depending on the speed of the impact and where and what kind of car and where it hit him. And based on his height and a normal car size, if he was in fact hit by a car and died from blunt force trauma to the head, I would expect that he would have substantial lower body fractures and injuries as well.
Is it possible with what he sustained injury-wise with the blow to the head, which they originally thought was a gunshot wound, to be hit by a car? I mean, or is this literally just something that is physically impossible where he'd only have that blow to the head and nothing else going on with his body?
That's a great question, Tony. I've worked on hundreds of fatal car accidents, and I've also worked on hundreds of fatal shootings. Injuries from a car accident cannot be confused with injuries from a gunshot wound. Blunt force trauma, it has a larger surface area of impact and damage. If you get hit by a car, you're going to have your shoes are going to fly off. You know, sometimes depending on the speed, you could have multiple fractures, even in areas of your body that weren't hit by the car. Because if you think about, let's say you get hit by the car right around the area of your waist or lower, depending on your height and depending on the car, you're going to have fractures to your femurs. You're going to have your hip bones out of whack, for lack of medical terminology. You're going to have stress fractures in your spine, ruptured discs, broken ribs. You're going to have massive internal injuries from that full body impact, and the head impact is really the ending of it. As your body snaps back, it could hit the windshield, and that could give you your massive head injury or the hood or so on and so forth. So in my opinion, a person who gets hit hard enough by a car to die from a head injury will definitely have other injuries related to the actual point of impact.
And would the vehicle in some way, shape, or form have left something there if, in theory, he did get hit by a car? Would there be something, glass? I don't know. Or can a vehicle do something like this?
Yeah, no, there would be. Yeah. Absolutely, Tony. Locard's principle is wherever you go, you leave something behind and you take something with you, regardless of how minuscule. And there's going to be the victim's blood that's going to, or tissue or so forth, will be on the car. There's no doubt about that. And then there would also be parts of the car, whether it's paint or chipping fragments or glass or something like that, left on the victim's clothing. There could be impression evidence. You know, front ends of vehicles are very distinct. So you can tell the grill of a Nissan versus the grill of an Audi versus the grill of a Ford, based upon how that impression could have left a mark on a large surface area of the body, say the back or the leg. So there's definitely things to look for, many things to look for to identify this. And let me tell you this, it is bad news for the Murdoch family if this thing comes back suspicious, because they are under a microscope, as I think they probably should be, Tony. for some pretty cringe and sketchy behavior, to say the least.
To say the least. I mean, Buster has not been convicted of anything. It was all rumors at the time. Not to say that some of that couldn't come to light as being factual. That's what rumors may or may not do. We just don't know. But it certainly does raise an eyebrow. This did not happen very far from the Murdaugh estate. One of the Murdaughs immediately got involved as an attorney for the family right when this happened. One of them was going around and trying to take pictures of the scene as well. There was a lot
that
of...
That sounds familiar, Tony.
Yes, it does.
Didn't
sound...
that happen sometime else?
Rather sounds yeah. familiar. But again, it's so I understand if Buster is innocent of any of this, him wanting this just to go away. He's already dealing with the death of his mother and his brother. His father's incarcerated. His whole world's been blown up. I get it. But at the same point, there's smoke here. It's not saying that he did it, but there's certainly smoke, so it's worth taking a look at in a deeper scope to see if there's something else going on. I guess that would lead us then to, there's two questions here. Number one, how do we get to the point where at the scene, they're saying this wasn't a hit and run. Look, there's no evidence of it being. It looks like a body was dropped. To where the actual medical examiner goes and makes the ruling, oh, this was a hit and run, in fact. And there's no evidence to it. How does that change? Wouldn't that be something where we also need to look at who's making that call and why they made that call or how they were influenced to make that call? Because it doesn't seem like something an experienced medical examiner would make unless there was some sort of outside influence saying, this is what we want to say this to be to make this go away.
Well, Tony, I want to give you, I think, a very poignant metaphor that I hope I don't lose the younger viewers on. But there's this movie back in 1977 called Jaws. And in the very opening scene of the movie Jaws, they find a victim who's clearly been eaten by a shark. And they convince the coroner that it was a boating accident. Well, this was no boating accident, I'll tell you that right now. Turns out to be that way. It sounds right out of somebody strong-arming local cops mm-hmm. to come to a quick conclusion because it's not good for the community. And these people were prominent members of the community. Now, this is all speculation right
yeah,
now, right, Tony?
Completely.
I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but this sounds like another sketchy situation. And I think what we need here is we need to see all of the photographs from this alleged hit and run, which there should have been many. If it was a hit and run, that's a murder, and that driver should be hunted down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There should be cameras and footage of what's going on, ring camera footage. You know, the internet should go crazy finding all of this stuff through Freedom of Information, I would think, right? And if it pans out that this was clearly not a hit and run, there's no evidence to support mm-hmm. a hit and run. There was no APB put out, all vehicles spotted for a murdering vehicle on the loose in South Carolina. And it was just swiped under the rug. And the coroner was just said, oh yeah, well, the cop said it was a hit and run. It must've been a hit and run. Mm-hmm. And that's about as much as this guy's going to do. You know, it just sounds pretty familiar, of a circumstance and, yeah, wouldn't want to be those guys right now.
No, I mean, it sounds like a familiar circumstance. And one has to also think, you know, I don't think the Murdaugh family were the only ones in that area that were getting special treatment. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
This seems like there could have been somebody somewhere. It could have been involved with that family. It could have been any other prominent family that had influence that didn't want so-and-so or someone being charged with this sort of a crime.
This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
We got more coming up with Scott Roeder. We're going to talk in more in depth now about what would the next steps be to find Stephen's killer. What can they do? Digital evidence, forensic evidence, what exists that could point investigators in the right direction. That's coming up. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss that part of the conversation wherever you're downloading podcasts. If you want an ad-free version, sign up to get it through Apple Podcasts right now. Even try it for 3 days free. My name's Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.